Hello, my name is Steve Wilbraham, and I'm the senior pastor of Congregational Presbyterian Church. We are glad to offer these audio sermons for our congregation and for those interested in learning more about our church and the Christian faith. We invite you to visit us, to meet our pastors and members, and to join us in the journey of faith. The mission of our church is to know Christ, to become like Christ, and to share Christ. Now, on to the sermon.
We continue our study of the book of 2 Thessalonians today by looking at chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. If you'd like to follow along, you'll find the passage on the back of your bulletin, or you'll find it on the screen behind me. Again, this is 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Finally, dear brothers and sisters, we ask you to pray for us. Pray that the Lord's message will spread rapidly and be honored wherever it goes, just as when it came to you. Pray, too, that we will be rescued from wicked and evil people, for not everyone is a believer. But the Lord is faithful, and He will strengthen you and guard you from the evil one. And we are confident in the Lord that you are doing and will continue to do the things we commanded you. May the Lord lead your hearts into a full understanding and expression of the love of God and the patient endurance that comes from Christ. I was 19 years old, just turned 19 years old, when I started my freshman year up at Whitworth University in Spokane. And I was excited to be at Whitworth. I was excited to play football there. I was excited to start my studies there. I was looking forward to all the things that I had read about in the brochures and heard about when I had gone on my recruiting trip from all the professors and individuals that I met there. It was an exciting time. But when I got there, things weren't exactly as I had hoped or planned that they would be. I remember getting a phone call from my best friend. His name was Colin. And Colin and my two other best friends, Josh and Michael, all three of them had gone to the University of Washington. And Colin called me one day, and I answered the phone. He says, "Hey, man, how are things going for you?" And I said, "Well, you know, honestly, bro, not so well." I said, "You know, football's pretty tough. I had been kind of a big fish in a little pond at the high school that I played at. I ended up being, well, I wasn't even a fish. I was more just bait, just being batted around on the field at that point. So things weren't going very well for me. And I was having a hard time making friends. Even though I had was playing with a bunch of guys on the football team, kind of a hard community to crack into at the time. And it was hard for me. And so my buddy Colin asked, "How are things going?" I said, "You know, honestly, man, they're not going real well. In fact, I'm kind of thinking I might drop out, transfer, and come hang out with you guys at the University of Washington." And he said, "Oh, that would be awesome." He said, "We could all get a house together. We could live together. It'd be just like high school. It'd be awesome." And I was thinking to myself, that would be really, sounds really, really good. Well, Colin hung up the phone, and he proceeded to go and call his mom. And he talked to his mom. He said, "Hey, mom, guess what? McLean's thinking about leaving Whitworth and coming to UW and hanging out with us." And she goes, "Oh, really?" He says, "Yeah." And they talked for a while and hung up. And a few days later, Colin's mom called my mom and said, "Carrie, I heard McLean is thinking about leaving Whitworth and going to UW." And my mom said, "Huh, I hadn't heard that yet." Well, about a week after that, I went to essentially the mail room at Whitworth University, and there was a letter in the mail. My mother had written me a letter, and when I opened it, the first line said, "Stop. Stop. You can do this." My mom proceeded to write me this letter of encouragement in which she told me about how she believed that God had called me to Whitworth. And that if I just stuck it out, that the football team, it was going to work out. Finding friends was going to work out. I was just about to start classes that I was excited about. Those things were going to work out. My mom encouraged me in this letter. Now, I don't know what would have happened if I'd have gone to the University of Washington. I can only speculate. I have a sneaky suspicion I wouldn't be standing here this morning. Wouldn't be married to Charlie, wouldn't have our beautiful little girl, Epperly. A lot in my life would be different. I stayed at Whitworth. And a lot of it has to do with that letter of encouragement. I still have that letter today. And sometimes I get it out and I read it to myself. And I think about these encouraging words that my mother wrote to me. 2 Thessalonians is Paul's letter of encouragement to the church in Thessalonica. Now, they need encouragement for all sorts of things. We've talked about a few of the things. There's some questions about Jesus' resurrection and who's going and who's not. And people are concerned and they want to know what does it mean to be the church in this city, Thessalonica. So they have those concerns that Paul is encouraging them in. But I imagine that they have the same concerns as you and I. Where's their next meal going to come from? What is their job going to look like? How are they going to continue to live life in a foreign country or in a country that's being dominated by the Romans? Maybe we don't have those specific questions. But the gist of it is, life is hard. Life is hard in 2022, just as it was in 50 AD. Life is not easy. And so Paul writes a letter of encouragement to the Thessalonians, and we see that exemplified in verse 1 of our passage. Paul says, "Pray that the Lord's message will spread rapidly and be honored wherever it goes, just as when it came to you." So the Thessalonians find themselves in the midst of hardship. They find themselves being faced with certain uncertainties and questions that they have. And Paul encourages them by saying, "Go out and spread the gospel. Go out and share this good news that we have shared with you that is beginning to transform your lives. Go out and give that to other people." That's the encouragement that Paul gives the Thessalonians. Share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Friends, I've already touched on it a little bit, but I think it's important to recognize that we also are faced with hardship. We also are faced with all kinds of obstacles, all kinds of evils, if you will, in this world that seek to overcome us and to keep us from walking and living the life that God has called us to. And so Paul's letter of encouragement to the Thessalonians is also our letter as well. Paul would have each and every one of us go out and share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, we get up here every Sunday, Pastor Steve and I, and the message is more or less the same. Go and share the gospel. You hear that a lot in this room. And that's a good thing, because that's what we're supposed to be about. The problem is that when we talk about sharing the gospel, I think what we think that means is just go out and talk about it, right? Just go out and say something about Jesus. Again, not a bad thing, but that's not what the core of what Paul is trying to describe here. When Paul says, go out and share the gospel, what Paul means is go out and live the gospel. Go out in your words, in your actions, in your relationships, and have your life be an example of a transformation that people will look like and say, I want to be a part of that. I want my life to reflect the kind of gospel transformation that this church, this community of people in Thessalonica or Lewiston, Clarkston Valley, wherever it might be, I want to look and experience like that. That's what Paul means when he says, go out and live the gospel. Go out and be an example of the transformation that comes from engaging Jesus Christ. That's what Paul encourages every one of us to go out and do. But I think there's a problem. I think as the Thessalonians heard Paul's encouragement, and I think as we hear this encouragement today, we hear Paul say, go out and live this gospel life. But then we look out into a world that is full of brokenness. We look out into a world that is full of sin. We look out into a world that is full of everything that opposes God's good plan for our lives. And we say, how do I do that in the face of these obstacles? How do I do that in the face of COVID? It's been about 2 years that we've been walking through this pandemic with one another. And we've had amazing moments of coming together as a community and loving and supporting and serving one another. And we've had moments that have been less like that. We've had moments of division. We've had moments when we've looked across the political aisle, whatever aisle, side of the aisle you might be on, and we've said, they're the ones to blame for this. We've had moments where we've acted out of jealousy and selfishness and pride. There are a lot of obstacles. There are a lot of experiences that would tell us that evil, brokenness, sinfulness in this world, it's still something we have to contend with on a daily basis. I was just reading this morning that it appears as if Russia will in fact invade the Ukraine. That saddens me. That saddens me. And I say this not for dramatic sake, right? I don't say this to be dramatic, but there are likely, if this does go through, there are likely people in Ukraine who are living their last days right now, and they don't know it. You think about that for a moment. There are people who are spending this very moment with their family that won't be with them in the next couple of days if this invasion does take place. We live in a broken world. There are many external examples of it. There are also internal examples of it. I don't have to look beyond my own heart, my own thought life, to recognize the brokenness, these obstacles that stand in our way of living this gospel life that God has called us to. I can be a prideful person. I can be a selfish person. When I'm asked to serve others, when I'm asked to place the needs of others before my own, I'm likely to say, well, you know what? When the time is right, then I'll do that. When I look at my own heart and I think about the way I look at other individuals who are not like me, individuals who have different beliefs than me, individuals who might even look differently than me, for whatever reason, sometimes I'm hesitant. I'm hesitant to fully embrace them as God would call me to do. I'll be honest, that is me at times. And I think we're all honest with ourselves. You also can relate to that. There is a brokenness that we see externally, but a brokenness that also comes from within our heart. This is the reality of the world that we live in. And so when Paul says to every one of us, when he seeks to encourage us with the words, go out and share the gospel, go out and live the gospel, I think we look at Paul and say, that sounds great, but what about all this? What about all the brokenness in the world? I think Paul understands that. I think Paul isn't blind to the fact that the Thessalonians, that the people in this room this morning, are experiencing hardships and opposition to living this life. And so he responds to that question in verse 3. But the Lord is faithful. But the Lord is faithful, and he will strengthen you and guard you from evil. But the Lord is faithful. In the face of the brokenness of this world, in the face of the uncertainty, the sin, our own selfishness, all of these external pressures we find around ourselves, God speaks one word to us from Paul today. The Lord is faithful. If you want to know where God demonstrates his faithfulness most clearly, you should walk to the foot of the cross. And you should see a God who doesn't stand outside of our brokenness, doesn't stand outside and point at us and say, figure it out. He walks and steps into the brokenness of this world, and he dies on a cross for us so that we do not experience that brokenness on our own. He lives that brokenness himself so that we might be redeemed. We might not have to experience the sin and the evil and the brokenness and be overwhelmed by it. There are a lot of people who are very interested in the book of Revelations. And it's an interesting book, right? Who doesn't get a little bit excited by fire and horsemen and all these sorts of things? And so I have a lot of conversations with folks who ask me, what is Revelation all about, right? Can you make sense of this book for me? And the truth is, friends, we don't have time to talk about all those pieces. But if I were to summarize it for you in one sentence, it's very simple. God wins. Love wins. Grace and mercy and redemption, those are the things that win. And so when we're faced with the brokenness of the world, God speaks to us a very clear message that He wins. God is faithful. And He has been faithful to us in Jesus Christ. This is the truth that God calls us to hold on to in the face of the brokenness of this world. And in the face of that brokenness, and in light of the fact that God is faithful to us, God calls us as Christians to go out and to respond to it. And I think that in the face of the obstacles we've been talking about, we often respond in multiple different ways. I want to talk about two ways that we respond that I actually think are helpful. Ways that maybe our response, we should try to avoid these reactions. The first one is this. When we are faced with the brokenness of this world, even though God has spoken to us that He is faithful, when we are faced with the brokenness of this world, we often lose hope. We see what feels like something that can't be overcome. You know, I experienced this a lot in my work with youth, with high schoolers and middle schoolers. In fact, as many of you guys know, and I alluded to this a while back, but this last summer I went to Washington, D.C. To participate in the funeral of one of my students who, as a senior in college, took his own life. And I remember sitting there watching his family as they were part of this memorial service, worship service, thinking to myself, this doesn't make sense. How can this be? How does this family, this young boy had an older sister, how does this young woman continue on in the face of this kind of heartache, in this kind of sadness? That's the reality that we face, and sometimes we lose hope. And when we lose hope, we stop acting. We stop doing things. We say, it's not even worth it. How do we overcome that kind of brokenness? I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel paralyzed. There's nothing that I can do that could possibly make a difference. And so I don't do anything. And I lose hope. One of our responses is that we lose hope. The second response I think we often have is that we become afraid. We experience fear. And when we are afraid, it's not that we don't do anything at all. Sometimes we do too much. I'm going to use an analogy, and you're going to have to bear with me, though, okay? I came to this valley about 6 years ago, and I mentioned I played football and played baseball in high school, so I'm somewhat athletic. However, I had never played golf, okay? And when I came to this valley, it became very clear that I needed to learn how to play golf in order to have any friends, because everyone here, it seems like, plays golf. And so many of you guys know Tom Bobel. He attends our first service. Tom took me out golfing for the first time at the Clarkston Country Club. And as I'm walking up to the first tee on hole number one, I'm thinking to myself, don't make a fool of yourself, please, right? Don't appear like you have no idea what you're doing. Just, you know, do something good here. And so as I'm coming up to the ball, and the best way to accomplish that, I'm going to hit this thing as hard as I possibly can. Right? I'm going to hit this thing as hard as I can. And so I line up to the ball, and I just say, you know, Lord, thy will be done. And I just swing that thing as hard as I possibly could, and I crush the ball, absolutely crush the ball, directly down the fairway. I chip onto the green. I'm a terrible putter. I two-putt in for par. My first hole of golf, I parred. I'm like, Tiger Woods, step aside. McLean is here, right? So I get up to the second hole. I line the ball up, same thing. Crushed it, absolutely. And it lands in the center of the fairway on hole number 7. Two fairways on the other side, right? I then proceeded for the entire day to just diagonally play the entire course. You never knew where I was going to be, right? And Tom, in his graciousness, that just waited as he, you know, chipped in for birdie and par, and we, it was like 8 hours to play a round of golf. I am a terrible golfer, all right? People ask me, do you golf? And I say, well, I swing a club, but I wouldn't call it golfing, right? My issue is that I tense up, I get afraid, and I try too hard. And it never goes well for me. And that's true as our lives as Christians as well. We get afraid when we're fearful of those things that oppose us to the life that God has called us to. We try too hard. One of the ways that we try too hard is that we start blaming other people for the brokenness around us. We oppose those people. We mistreat those people. We judge those people. We say, it's your fault the world is this way, rather than showing them grace, rather than showing them compassion, rather than showing them the same love that Christ has shown us. We also try too hard in that we think we are going to be the ones that fix the world. Friends, I get that. I want to be that kind of change as well. But the truth is that we are called to simply point to Jesus. We're called to simply point through our actions and our words, everything that we live, everything we do in our lives, to say Christ is doing what is necessary in order to address the issue, which is at the core of our hearts. It's our brokenness and our sin. So serve, yes. Seek justice, yes. Most importantly, point others to the love of Jesus Christ. When we are afraid, we sometimes do too much. When we lose hope, sometimes we don't do anything at all. So what should be the response that we give? In the face of the brokenness in the world, what can we do? Well, Paul, he gives us a roadmap for that as well. And it's found in verse 5. He says, may the Lord lead your hearts into a full understanding and expression of the love of God. I want you to think about these words for a moment. May the Lord lead your hearts into a full understanding and expression of the love of God. What would this world look like if we as the church allowed Christ to lead our hearts into a full understanding and expression of God's love? What would it look like if we allowed ourselves to open the door of our hearts to a God who wants to show us love and mercy and then turn around and show that to other people? We just heard the choir sing a beautiful song. And the lyrics in that song said, "Abide in me." The idea there is that we welcome Christ to build His home in our lives. And when we build that home, when we set up a fireplace and a dining hall and a place to rest, to sleep in the love of Jesus Christ, that changes us and it changes the community around us. That's what it means to live a full expression of the love of God. To understand it at a level that goes beyond just noetic acknowledgement, but to a heart that is transformed by that knowledge and then changes how we live our lives every single moment, day to day, minute to minute. So I want to leave you this morning with a challenge. I know every single one of us faces the brokenness in this world. Some of the brokenness in my life looks different from you. It's unique to all of us. Some of it we share. Some of it we see on a more communal, national level. But we all experience brokenness in one way. How are you responding? Are you responding out of fear? Are you responding out of a loss of hope? If you are, maybe you need to hear the encouragement of rather than responding in this way, maybe you need to hear Paul's words of encouragement to live out the expression of a full understanding of the love of God. That is what we are called to as disciples of Christ. Let that be the gospel we live in our lives every single day. Please pray. God, in your grace and in your mercy, you have called us, Lord, to share the gospel. So, Lord, help us to live it. Help us not to respond to the brokenness, to the evil in this world through fear or loss of hope. But, Lord, let us hold on to a full expression of your love, that we would love you fully, and that we would love our neighbor, even our enemy, Lord, as ourselves, that we might be transformed to be your disciples by the power of your Holy Spirit. We pray these things in Christ's name.